Welcome back to Public Address Radio on Radio Live. According to the most recent report of the World Internet Project for New Zealand, 83% of us use the internet and 40% use it for more than 10 hours a week. We're pretty comfortable with it. But John Freeman's book, Shrinking the World, warns that email is reducing our time for leisure and contemplation and separating us from each other in the lonely battle of the inbox. Freeman, the editor of the literary magazine Granta, says we should think again and log off. He's with us now to talk about the book, the magazine, and writing in general. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Now, let's start with the book. What made you write Shrinking the World?
Well, I just felt like a massive shift had happened in communication and that all these conversations we used to have face-to-face or through letters or on the telephone were suddenly happening over email. And personally, I was getting 200 or 300 emails a day and I felt like I could never get to the bottom of my inbox. And I discovered I wasn't alone. And I felt like there was a moment that had to be taken to say, okay, is this really working for us?
Do you think anyone really reads all their emails anymore?
No, they scan them, and other ones get buried, and then friends silently sulk and get angry, and friendships break up, and it doesn't really work.
What's the response been to the book? I imagine there'll be people who disagree quite strongly with it.
Well, that's what I was expecting, but so far, and perhaps it's because when you go to a reading for a book like this, you either have a problem or you have a problem with the problem. It's been really positive, and I think hopefully it can start a conversation that I think needs to happen, which is, you know, technology is so often sold to us as a form of progress, but it doesn't always mean progress. And if we have any kind of agency, it means that we have to stop and think about the way technology is changing how we behave.
Do you have a sort of utopian vision of humans emerging, blinking into the light, flinging their laptops into the fields as they sort of run and embrace each other in it?
No. I love email for a lot of reasons. I mean, I live in two countries and I work in a way that I could not work without email. I think it's hugely efficient for many things, but we use it too much. And there's all these old forms of communication, like the telephone, like writing a postcard, like sending a letter, like actually walking down the hall and talking to your coworker, that we don't do anymore. And the fact that we're not doing them keeps us tied ever more to that email inbox.
Because there are messages, I'm thinking not so much necessarily of email, although the back and forth one, but chatting online or text messaging and emails when you're sending short messages back and forth can often take an hour to do something that you could do in a minute on the phone, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's email is probably one of the worst ways to set up a coffee date because you end up with 25 emails. And then you have to say thanks. All right, see you then. All right, bye.
The book's notably well-referenced, but it did actually make me go and look at some other research, the World Internet Project study that I noted earlier on. And that kind of didn't bear out what you say in the book about alienation. According to that study, more than half of us, that's New Zealanders, say the internet has increased our overall contact with family and friends. Speakers of Maori and Pacific Island languages have said it puts them more in touch with their languages. Mm. So there's clearly a light side.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, for people who live at great distance from one another, especially if they're not communicating it before they get email, it seems like a wonderful moment when it arrives. And I think in some ways, the book that I've written is very much from an American perspective, and because the problem is the worst in America, but it is being exported to other countries. I think, you know, given the way that other countries have gone with their use of email and the internet, I think maybe in 10 or 15 years, this problem will be as bad here.
I think it possibly is, but it was interesting you say it, you know, it's from an American viewpoint because everything is adjacent to you there culturally. Whereas what the internet has meant to people in New Zealand is the ability to read, say, the New York Review of Books online or The Guardian, which has surely been a good thing.
Yeah, I think that's a great thing that you can actually read almost any newspaper in the world online for free now. It's not a great thing for those newspapers because they're struggling to make a business model that works. And I think the other thing that happens when we have so much choice over our publications is that it devalues the ones which are right in front of us. So instead of building a tremendous literary review in a local newspaper, you go and just read the New York Review. If you believe that culture should come from everywhere rather than one place, one centralized place, then that can be a dangerous development.
See, I was having this discussion just yesterday with a friend who said that he wished there's a New Zealand magazine we were discussing. He said, I wish they had a lot more stories from overseas in there. I said, but why would you want to? This is the one chance we've got to tell our New Zealand stories. Why would we want, you know, when you can go to, you know, Guardian or Salon.com or anything, you know, and read great stories from overseas?
Well, I think it's a tension in any culture, which is how much do you import and how much do you export? And it's not like a commerce model. It's just where's your sense of reality coming from?
Where's your cultural balance of trades at?
Yeah, exactly.
So where does all this leave Granter, which is quite it's always been a very singular kind of publication. It's a magazine that looks like a book. How's that traveling these days?
Well, it's still traveling as a book. We export it to New Zealand and Australia, and it's distributed here through a local distributor, Allen & Unwin. And we try to make it as beautiful as possible so that people want the actual physical thing. You can still read parts of it on the web, and we're developing an ebook and an iPhone app for people who want to read that way. But primarily, I think there's something mysterious and almost occult which happens when you pick up a literary review or a book, which is an object, which is on paper, which is something foreign and tangible and that you open and touch and have an interaction with, which isn't on a screen. You can put it aside and it's somehow other, where when you're looking at a screen, there's a barrier that goes down, I think, because it's what you're reading on a screen is on a screen that has all your email, that you correspond with your friends, where you develop documents, and there's a blurring which happens, which I think is slightly problematic when you start to do everything on that screen.
But I get the impression that you think that the print book is not going away anytime soon.
No, I think actually in some ways the multimedia world we live in has made the print book even more special, and it just makes it all the more imperative for magazines like Granta or McSweeney's or The New Yorker to make themselves, look as interesting and beautiful as possible, because it has to celebrate the fact that it is a print object. So we've just hired a new art director who did the cover for our sex issue, and it's this really provocative pink purse on
the
cover.
It's an amazing image, because I looked at it and thought, that's a bit rude. Oh, actually, just a change purse.
It's just a change purse. But, it's an everyday object, and that's what we're trying to play with, is that, in some ways sex is an everyday topic. We live with it. We think about it. We probably think about it more than we do it. And yet somehow, as soon as you start to write about it or think about writing about it or talk about writing about it, it becomes less serious. And to me that seems sort of like a loss, because, Shakespeare and Chaucer and every writer through the ages has written well about sex. And it's only in our period, I think, that we've started to think about sex and being humorous and body and funny about sex is somehow less than literary.
Where is it? I mean, America over the last, say, 10 years has gone through something of a moral, what's the word I'm looking for, an outcry. Everything seems to have become a lot more conservative, a lot more prudish in that regard. I mean, is this changing, do you think? Is this what you're...
It's a really schizophrenic country in some ways, because it was founded by Puritans, but it is the pinnacle of late capitalism, and capitalism is an amoral system. It moves the way that capital has to move, and sex has been used to sell things, and sex has become, kind of combined with violence. There's an eroticism of violence in the culture that in some ways has transplanted sex, and so we live in a very visceral culture, but all those Puritan urges and instincts are still there, and so people try to control the where people have sex and who they have sex with and how you can talk about sex and how you can show it. But in many other parts of the culture, it's coming right up through the floorboards.
What do you know about Granta's readers? Will it be fair to describe them as a liberal audience?
I think so. I mean, we did a reader survey, about 5 years ago, and our subscription person said to me, I think Granta's reader is a 55-year-old divorced guy who collects wine. But that's obviously changing, because I think about half of our readers are under 40. They are liberal, and they're outward looking. And I think, you were asking me earlier about Granta and how it moves through the world. I think the one thing that's very helpful about the digitizing of culture is that things move and are more apparent and are easier to access.
And more easily shared, I think, is a good one. It's
yes,
quite
exactly.
Hard to lend a book to five different people at once, but you can do that with...
Yeah,
you only get to lend it to two people and then it never comes back and you have to go and buy another copy. That's the problem. That is the problem, fundamental problem with books. But I harking back to something you were saying about I can't relax in front of a screen personally. I can relax with a book, but there's a screen in front of you. It doesn't matter what you're reading. It always reminds me of those late night deadlines, sitting there at 3 a.m. trying to get up to 5,000 words, Brilliant. Look, thank you very much for coming along. I hope you've enjoyed your stay in New Zealand.
So far, so good.
John Freeman, editor of Granta and author of Shrinking the World. After the break, it's P Money, y'all.